Good morning. Certainly is good to see everyone here this morning. Thank you for being here. And I'm very thankful once again to have the opportunity to talk to you about things that I'm interested in. But more than that, things that we're all interested in because we all have a like precious faith. And we know who our Creator is. Well, whenever I do have the opportunity to preach, most of the time, it seems, I preach on what I've been thinking about or studying about for some time, and I simply make that a sermon, whatever it happens to be. So what has Les been thinking about or studying about recently? Well, for probably 2 years now, I have been thinking about and studying about the vestibular system and the vestibular labyrinth and the vestibulo-ocular reflex system and various other things related to the vestibular system. Now, if you're visiting with us, you'd say, well, this seems to be a very strange sermon from this fellow. And the rest of you who are here regularly say, oh, Les is up to a typical sermon of his. So this is the kind of thing that this congregation gets from time to time. There are systems all around us all the time. There are really, really big systems, like stellar systems, galactic systems, galaxies that are in systems. And the bigger telescopes we make and the farther we see out into space, the bigger the systems get. There seems to be no end. We're living in a system, a solar system. Our planet is in a system along with the other planets around the sun. So there's a solar system. And then there's an ecosystem here on the Earth. We're coming down from really big to really small this morning. The ecosystem, the ecology of the Earth is a very interesting system because it's a lot of systems that are in place that have a lot of symbiotic relationships between them by which no one of them can exist without the others. They're interrelated and integrated and coordinated and organized together. If you come down to us, our bodies, we have typically, they say, 10 to 12 recognized systems that are part of our body. We've got a nervous system. We've got an integumentary system. We've got a circulatory system. We've got an endocrine system. We've got a respiratory system. We've got a digestive system. We've got a reproductive system. We have a urinary system. We have a muscular system. We have a skeletal system. We have a sensory systems. Now, if you think, man, Les is really smart. He just named all those systems. Well, there's an acronym, and I'll tell it to you just so you can do this at private parties and such to impress people. It's NICER drums. The word NICER drums is that each one of those letters, as I just went down through them in my mind. But anyway, the point is, there's a lot of systems around. And I'm going to be talking about one that actually has not been known for very long. So if you say vestibular system, I don't even know what that is. Well, don't be ashamed, because nobody has known about the vestibular system until a few years ago. And I'm going to tell you about it. So just so you'll know that this is a Bible subject, we're going to look at a few. I guess I got to turn this on first. There we go. Oh, well, I meant to. That's the solar system. Forgive me, I'm behind on my slides already. That's the ecosystem. Trees really aren't that big, by the way. So here we are. We're caught up now. Psalm 139, you formed my inward parts. You covered me in my mother's womb. I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works, and that my soul knows very well. Psalm 105. Oh, give thanks to the Lord, call upon his name, make known his deeds among the peoples. Sing to him, sing psalms to him, talk of his wondrous works. Glory in his holy name. Let the hearts of those rejoice who seek the Lord. So I want to talk about his wondrous works this morning. And this one will get us a little closer. If you don't know what the vestibular system relates to, this one is a little bit more specific, a little closer to what we're going to be talking about. The hearing ear and the seeing eye, the Lord has made them both. So we're going from really big things down to really small things. So what is the vestibular system? Well, it's wondrous and it's marvelous, and nobody knew about it until recent years. And most of this that I'm talking about this morning has not been known. So this is sort of new material. There's much more to your ears than hearing. And I'm going to give you basically a quick overview of what the vestibular system is all about. Some of it you will be familiar with, and I'm sure some of it you will not be. It is a sensory system that is embedded deep in your ears that provides our brain with information about motion, about head movement, head position, about spatial orientation, where your body is in space, and about balance, or what's known as equilibrium. And without the vestibular system, I would not be able to stand up here before you like this. I would collapse on the floor. If you did not have these tiny organs in your body, you would not be able to stand. You certainly wouldn't be able to walk. You wouldn't be able to run. You wouldn't be able to do any common, typical daily task that you do without the vestibular system. It holds your body up. It creates your posture in space. It creates your structure for your body. So the inner ear actually has six different parts. Let me see if I can use this little thing here. Yeah, that works. So everybody's familiar with this snail-shaped apparatus here called the cochlea. Most people are familiar with these canals here called the semicircular canals. There's an anterior, a posterior, and a lateral. They are at right angles to one another inside you, and there, of course, they're symmetrically mirrored. All of these are, in fact. And then the ones that you probably are not familiar with are the... Whoops, wrong one. Hold on. The ones that you are probably not familiar with are these two right here, which are the ones that have not been known for very long. These are what are known as the otolithic organs. One is called the utricle, and the other one is called the saccule. Those are what actually we're going to be talking about today. I'm going to be talking about the semicircular canals and their connection to the eyes on December 29th. So if you're here, you've got something to look forward to or dread, as the case may be. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 organs inside your ear. And they're really, really small. So There's two otolithic organs called the utricle and saccule, which relate to static equilibrium. And what I mean by static equilibrium is when you are still, like I am and most of you are now, you're either sitting or standing, or even if you're lying down, that's static. In other words, you're not in motion, so you're static. Static equilibrium is something nobody ever thinks about, but God did. And I'm going to explain to you how this works in a moment, but not only do the utricle and saccule relate to static equilibrium, but also what's known as dynamic equilibrium, which relates to acceleration. So if you're an example would be if you're in a car and you press on the gas, you're trying to get through, you know, you're trying to get going really fast and your head goes back. That is dynamic equilibrium. So, and the utricle and the saccule are organs that relate to acceleration and static equilibrium. So either going up or down or forward or back mostly. So that's what it's about. So the semicircular canals, as we mentioned, are three tubes that are situated at right angles to one another, which correspond to the X, Y, Z axis. There's an anterior, there's a posterior, and then there's a lateral that goes between the two. We live in a three-dimensional world. And those three tiny tubes, the semicircular canals, relate to the three dimensions in which we move in this world. So they relate to nodding up and down like this, like you're saying, yes, yeah, I understood that. Or no, like this, side to side, no, I don't get that. Or tilting, which we don't do as much, like this. So those are what the three, six semicircular canals relate to. So now we're going to go into more detail, starting with the otolithic organs, which again is the utricle and the saccule. So what is the mechanism with which they detect gravitational forces and horizontal and vertical acceleration? Well, let's start with the title, otoliths, otolithic. What is that about? Well, the otoliths, as you can see right here, there's otoliths, the title, all the otolithic organs, which you see over here, where they are. So the otoliths are tiny calcium carbonate crystals that are embedded in the otolithic membrane, which is this light blue area through here. See all these little crystals here? They're actually, this is an illustration, of course, but they're actually real. They're actually in there. They're actually in your ears. Otoconia is ear stones. I believe it's Latin for ear stones. So here they are. And why are they there? What is this about? And then below that, you have the hair cells, which we'll talk about in detail, and the supporting cells down here. Now, this whole apparatus here is called the macula. So you can see the macula of the utricle here and the macula of the saccule here. This is complex stuff. Now, this whole macula in here is about 2 millimeters in diameter, which is just a little bit more than a 16th of an inch. Very, very small. So why are those, there are 46,000 of these little hair cells inside of your ear. They actually come in bundles. And the whole complex, as I mentioned, was called the maculae. So the utricle has a maculae, and the saccule has a maculae, each of which is about 2 millimeters in diameter. The hair cells of the utricle, therefore, and the macula itself, are pointing vertically. Now, if you want to remember this, remember utricle, that if you remember a U, how a U looks, the two ends of the U are pointing up, right? So it's like this. So if you want to remember utricle, which direction they're pointing, then you can remember the U. So here we are, okay, we can use this one. So here again, this is a different illustration, but here are your otoliths, autoconia. Here is your gelatinous matrix in here. And here is your cilia, or hair cells, which is a very, a hair cell doesn't seem to really do it as far as its complexity. But if we were looking at this one here, this one would be the utricle, because the hair cells are sticking up vertically, upward. If we were looking at the saccule, then the saccule would be, if you were to illustrate this with a, if you had a cube, the utricle would be sticking off the floor of the cube. And at the saccule, the hair cells would be sticking off the side or the wall of that cube. So that's important, because that's how the sensory mechanism determines whether you're going forward or backward or up or down, you see. So now, because the otolithic crystals are heavier than the perilymph fluid, which is inside of the utricle and saccule, these autoconia actually force the gelatinous membrane here to move these hair cells. And you'll notice that they're in a particular form here. Let me see what the next one looks like here. Okay. This is a good illustration here. Incidentally, what I just mentioned right here, the utricle is on the floor of the utricle, or the vestibule, and the saccule then is on the side or the wall. So that's the good there. And then if we were to look at one of these cells, which are 46,000 of these, we're going to look at a real one here in a few minutes. But you'll notice this particular unique feature here, where there's shorter ones, and then it goes up to longer ones, and then there's a kinocilia at the top. All these smaller ones are called stereocilia, as you can see there, and this longer one is called kinocilia. Now, they're composed in this way because when the gelatinous membrane is affected by either gravity or acceleration, then what happens is the gelatinous membrane actually bends the hair cells this way or that. Now, if this were the kinocilia over here and these were the stereocilia, and the motion was going this direction, then see what happens even to my hand? They open up. Now, that opening up is very important, because what's happening there is they're opening up to potassium channels that are controlled by tip links that are the tips of each one of these stereocilia. So the stereocilia here, when something, let's say the force is going this direction, then what happens is these stereocilia are allowing potassium to come down into the cell, which depolarizes the cell. And when the cell is depolarized, it is an excitatory neurological effect, which then goes to certain muscles throughout your body. But now, if just talking about this feature for the moment, if the motion is going this direction, then what's going to happen? This kinocilia and the other, if you can imagine them going that way, then what happens? They close. Now, why is that important? Because one direction they open and the other direction they close. So why that's important and why that affects the rest of the muscles is because they're not, there's an electrochemical pathways that are created through the opening and closing of these tiny bundles of stereocilia, hair cells, and kinocilia. Potassium goes down in there, depolarizes the cell, and then it connects to a whole host of other extremely difficult to understand complexity. It would be, how does if we were to think about like our power plant over in Skyland at Lake Julian, you know, there's a power plant there, but how are we getting these lights on here or at your home? How is that happening? Well, the power plant over there can generate all the power it wants to, but if there's not power lines that make their way to this building, then I can't use my PowerPoint and we can't have these all these lights on and various other things. What we've looked at so far is kind of the basic mechanism by which the vestibular system works, but we haven't talked about the chemistry of it as much. So the basic electrochemical power lines that I'm about to describe are similar in both the autolithic organs and also in the semicircular canals. So if we were to zoom in on, which we've kind of already done here, let me see if there's another. Here's a good illustration. If we were to zoom in on one hair cell, which you can see two here, in fact, this nicely illustrates what I was just trying to illustrate with my hand. You can see here how there's a pressure wave coming this direction. And when the pressure wave comes this direction, then that little K plus there means potassium. And there you have your little tip links. See those little purple things right there? Those are the tip links, which are proteins that allow the potassium to go inside. Now there's another whole chemistry that relates to the perilymph, which is on the outside, which has different chemicals, but we're going to stay away from that for the moment. So there's a depolarization that goes on inside the cell. There's also calcium that comes in these little auricles here on the sides, which also affects the connection to the neurotransmitters, which is down here. So again, you've got 46,000 of these per ear in the macula. And so, let's see, potassium channels. So again, if the flow of pressure wave is going this direction, then these tip links are then closed rather than open like they are here. So that's the mechanism. So there's an actual physical mechanism that creates this initial electrochemical connections that go down through your spinal column into your cerebellum and down through your spinal column and keeps you upright, basically. That's just one part of it, though. Like I said, when I bring a lesson on December 29th, I'm going to be talking about the semicircular canals, which have a completely, they are related to this, but they're actually involved more with the eyes than you may have ever thought. So here's kind of a rundown. The arrival of pressure wave bends the stereocilia here. potassium channels open in response to bending here. Membrane depolarizes due to influx of potassium here. Depolarization triggers inflow of calcium ions here. And then the calcium causes synaptic vesicles and to fuse with plasma membrane down here. And then the neurotransmitter is released and diffuses to afferent neuron down here, which then goes to your brain, and your brain interprets it. It goes down through your muscles to create your posture and many other things and gives you the sense of where you are in space. Let me see. When the temp leaks are open, then you have an excitatory feature of the neurotransmitters, which are synaptoproteins that open up the nerve terminals to the central process, the central nervous system, and the cerebellum, and continuing on down the spine, as I mentioned. If you were to look at the top, this is also very important. To understand this system, this is very important. If you were to look at the top, if you were to look at the top of the utricle and the saccule, what you would see, and what this little illustration is showing, is that the hair cells, the cilia, are oriented in two different directions on either side of this striola, which is in the middle here. See that line? So that's the utricle, and the saccule is here, and again, you see the striola through the middle here. Well, what's that all about? Well, the way this works is whenever you have an excitatory stimulus from the neurotransmitters or from the stereoconchinocilia, you have to have both an excitatory and an inhibitory side. Otherwise, and that relates to a contraction of a muscle or a relaxing of a muscle. So these two sides then relate to the contraction on the excitatory side and at the same time a relaxation on the inhibitory side. Same thing here, even though those little arrows are showing you the orientation of the cilia, but the same thing is true with both of these. There's an excitatory side and an inhibitory side. It's just like when you use your muscle to lift something, some muscles have to contract while other muscles have to relax. So if I'm doing this, this side is contracting while this side is relaxing. Or if I'm putting it down, I'm pressuring it down, then my bicep muscle has to relax while these under here have to contract. So that's how this works here. There's an excitatory side and an inhibitory side. And that line of demarcation there is called the striola. Isn't that interesting? Have you ever heard of these things before? No. Well, I hadn't either, until a few years ago when I started studying these. So let me see where I want to go here. Incidentally, even though I said that these are both oriented for inhibitory and excitatory functions, all the hair cells, though, themselves can do both, because they all have the stereocilia and the kinocilia at the top. So they are all capable of going both ways, but it relates to either allowing or disallowing the polarization of the cell. So the entire labyrinth, what's known as the bony labyrinth, I think I have an illustration of this. Let's see. Maybe not. Let's see. Actually, what I'm going to show you next is the actual thing. Now, just a matter of a few years ago, you would not have been able to see this. So we are very privileged in our day and time with medical and imaging techniques to see something like this. Thousands of generations of humans for thousands of years had no concept of this whatsoever, and certainly would never have been able to see it. And so what you have here, this is an actual image of an actual utricle, I believe, either utricle or saccule. And you can see all the kind of cilia here. I mean, cilia, rather. The kind of cilia is harder to see on this image, but I believe I've got another one that you can see it. Let's see. So here, all right, this is a good one. So this is amazing stuff. I mean, I am just endlessly fascinated by this. I wanted to notice, too, though, how these are in these hexagon, like a honeycomb shape here. Isn't that interesting? Look at that. And so they're situated in extremely well-defined and organized and coordinated modules here. And then look at this one. Here is your kinocilia that's leading up to your, see that little bulge right there above that? That's actually your stereocilia, and there's your kinocilia right there. See here, here's a kinocilia. This one right here you can see really, really well because it's oriented the other direction. So look, I don't know if this happens to be the line of demarcation between the two. It's possible, but it could be. But I don't know that. There wasn't a description of that. But here's the kinocilia right here, this one. The kinocilia. And then these are all the stereocilia. Now this is inside of your ear. There's 46,000 of these in the macula. Our God is great. So you think that he can't, you think that God doesn't know about your problems? He knows about your problems. He knows everything there is to know about you. I'm going to save a more, all things are possible with God. I'm going to save some of this for later, to give you some time to digest this. But what does all this mean? Well, it means a lot of things. But you know, we look at ourselves in the mirror nearly every day. We look at other people. We see two eyes that are symmetrical, one on one side and one on the other. We see two ears, and you know, that are, these are the just parts that, you know, bring in sound waves into the eardrum, the tympanic membrane, and into the cochlea, where there is an epithelium that has tens of thousands of rows of hair cells that relate to the auditory system. But we look at ourselves in the mirror. We see a ball joint and a humerus, a radius, an ulna, and 27 bones of our hand and wrist on the right side. And then we look on the left side, and here's a ball joint, a humerus, a radius, an ulna, and 27 bones of the hand and wrist. We look at our leg, and here's a ball joint up here at the hip, and there's a femur, the largest bone of your body. There's a kneecap, and then there's the tibia and fibula, and then there's 26 bones of your foot. That's on the right. And then on the left, look again. There's a ball joint, there's a femur, there's a tibia and fibula, there's a kneecap, and there's 26 bones of your foot on the other side. That's amazing. I mean, it's just easy to accept these things because that's all we ever see. We're in a bubble. We're in a design bubble. And all we ever see is design, so we can't see it. It's like asking a fish, what does it feel like to be wet? He doesn't know how it feels to be wet. because he's always wet. We don't know what it feels like not to be in design because we're always in design. We are born into design. And that's one of the reasons why people can be atheist. It's because they don't see it. They do not see the handiwork of God because they're so saturated with it. They're wet with it. They're immersed in it. They are totally immersed in design all the time. And that's why they can't see it. It's like a fish in water. Well, we've come, the femur is the largest bone in the body. I bet even the children know what the smallest ones are. The malleus, the incus, and the stapes, otherwise known as the hammer, the anvil, and the stirrup. Those are, how do you get a random mutation that develops into a hammer, anvil, and stirrup on one side, and then you get a random mutation that creates a hammer, anvil, and stirrup on the other side? How is that possible? Do you understand that people believe this? They believe this happened. Symmetry is extremely improbable. In fact, how do you find an arrowhead among rocks? Because it's symmetrical, right? Oh, here's an arrowhead. It's the same on both sides. So we can recognize a one piece of gravel from an arrowhead, but we can't recognize the symmetry that is in nearly every, pretty much all living things. That's just remarkable. These components or systems cannot be added to one thing at a time in some imaginary slow process. You know, I could just stop talking and say, glory to God, praise God, all things are possible with God. That would be fine with me, you know. And if everybody on earth believed that, we could just stop right there and just thank the Lord for his amazing, wondrous, marvelous works. But because most of the world doesn't believe what you and I believe, I have to talk about other things for just a few minutes. Scraps of bones that evolutionists, Darwinian morphists, transitionalists, shapeshifters, thinking that everything is in constant flux and everything is constantly evolving, the scraps of bones become absolutely meaningless in the light of this complex symmetry. It's not just symmetrical on the outside. The symmetry on the inside is even more complicated than the symmetry on the outside. Evolution is a scam. We are being scammed. Human beings are being scammed on huge proportions, perpetuated by this world of, perpetuated on the world of humans. It is a mass hallucination that is being accepted by the world, that is a stronghold of the devil. Many of my relatives believe some form of evolution. Most of the people that I talk to out on the street believe in some form of evolution, even when they say that they are Christians, oddly enough. I'm not going to go into all of that. Here's what you want to know what makes sense? Oh, incidentally, that's the size there. I tried to find a penny, but that's a euro. So all of this complexity is about the size of a penny. One side there, as you see illustrated. Here's what makes sense. Let me go back one. The hearing ear and the seeing eye, the Lord has made them both. That's what makes sense. That's what we can see. That's what clearly is logical and rational. The hearing ear and the seeing eye, the Lord has made them both. Now I'll leave you with a passage here from Psalm 94. Yet they say, the Lord does not see, nor does the God of Jacob understand. Understand, you senseless among the people, and you fools, when will you be wise? He who planted the ear, shall he not hear? Let me see. He who planted the eye, shall he not see? He who instructs the nations, shall he not correct? He who teaches man knowledge. In other words, the idea is that the Lord is the one who gives us knowledge. We don't give him any. He gives us knowledge. The Lord knows the thoughts of man, that they are futile. Blessed is the man whom you instruct, O Lord, and teach out of your law. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. You know what the word science means? Science means knowledge. It's a Latin word that means knowledge. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of science. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. You start there. If you have the right starting place, you can have the right ending place. If you don't have the right starting place, you will not get the right ending place. Can you see or hear the frustration of God in these words here? Understand, you senseless among the people, and you fools, when will you be wise? You hear that frustration? God is frustrated with humans when they don't see what's obvious. He is frustrated with them. He was so frustrated with the whole of man that he destroyed all of us, except for 8 people in the flood. Jesus was frustrated with humans when, like, for example, after the feeding of the 5,000, and then they go across the Sea of Galilee to find him and say, we want some more food. Hey, this guy, let's make him king. Jesus was frustrated. He says, did I not just feed 5,000? Can't you see who I am? But rather than seeing who he was, they basically, if we make this guy king, we won't have to work anymore. That's how God gets frustrated. I don't want God to be frustrated with less. I don't want God to be looking down at less and say, oh, I wish I hadn't made him. No. I want God to look down at less and say, I'm glad I made him. And I'm glad I made Earl and Rick and Diana and Ray. If I don't name your name, it doesn't mean that you're not, again, valuable. That's what we want. We want God to be pleased with our lives. He has done everything that he needs to do. And if you want to avoid having futile, vain, confusing, empty, meaningless thoughts, let God be your instructor. He will be your instructor. He will be your teacher. Let God be your teacher, and then you will know things that are true. And you can set your sights on a course that leads you to heaven and not to hell. We all want to go to heaven and be with God. And these things are fairly self-evident, I think. But if there's anyone here, that's your lesson for today. And thank you for your patience. I know that we went a little long here, and I appreciate your staying with me. Any questions that we have about that after the service is done, if you have any, I've studied this for 2 years, so if you want to know some more about it, just ask. I'll be happy to answer any questions that I can. So thank you for that. And if there's anybody here that I can help in any way, that we can help in any way, come closer to the Lord, then this is a good time to do it while together we stand and sing.